6:35, welcome back. Really cold start to your week, too. It's some of the wind chill values all around southern New Brunswick. It doesn't matter where you are, in the minus 30s, so bundle up if you're getting an early start. The University of New Brunswick has engaged a renowned expert to examine the best practices in autism treatment. Dr. David Celiberti is president of the Association for Science and Autism Treatment. His report, commissioned by UNB's College of Extended Learning, examines program quality that's already in place in other jurisdictions. The findings will be used to provide quality assurance, they say, for UNB's program and to help UNB with its autism intervention training. Joining me on the phone is Dr. David Celiberti. He's taught courses related to applied behavioral analysis and has authored several articles in professional journals. He's also a sought-after speaker for national and international conferences on autism and other behavioral disorders. He's in Hoboken, New Jersey. David, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. One question that I have off the top is, as far as the University of New Brunswick, they've commissioned a report by you that's expected to have some wide-ranging implications for treatment, not only in this province, but throughout Atlantic Canada. First of all, tell us a little bit about the Association for Science and Autism Treatment.
Sure. This is an organization that was founded in 1998 to promote the dissemination of information, science-based information about autism treatment, and to counter some of the misinformation and misrepresentation that challenge parents and providers of kids with autism.
Yeah, because when it comes to treatment, there are so many different things to consider. There's not really one protocol to follow, and sort of that's where a lot of your work is focused, because you want to be able to find, I guess, the best ways to treat autism, because once we find out that a child has it, you want to know that a parent can pick from a number of different sort of intervention treatments, but you want to know which ones work the best, correct?
Yes, absolutely. You want parents to have accurate information to make the best possible choice for their child, a choice that is founded and grounded in scientific research published in peer-reviewed journals.
So how long have you been working on just looking at different forms of intervention treatments? And I'm sure there's all kinds of different ways that we can work with kids who are autistic or have other different social disorders like that. Just talk a little bit about some of the things that you end up seeing as good forms of treatment. I'm sure there's all different kinds.
Well, there are all different kinds, indeed. And some of them are effective and some of them are ineffective, actually can harm a child. And some of them have no impact. In terms of my own work, I'm a clinical psychologist and a certified behavior analyst, and I've been in the field for about 20 years using applied behavior analysis as the primary treatment. I work with children from age 3 through 21, and I've seen a lot of success using this methodology. But I want to point out that even though we're using, say, a method called applied behavior analysis, it is completely individualized to the student. Just to give a quick example, if you have two students who are engaging in, like, self-injurious behavior, like maybe they're engaging in headbanging, that if one was engaging that behavior for attention-seeking purposes, that behavior would be treated very, very differently than another student who would be engaging in the same exact behavior, perhaps to get out of schoolwork or maybe when a parent asks him or her to get dressed. So things are very, very individualized, and I don't want to give your listeners the misconception that when you're using one approach, it's cookie cutter, much like an antibiotic intervention would be for someone with, say, strep throat.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, because every kid's different, and everybody who has some of these behavioral disorders, they might act out in the same way, but you're right, the motivation as to why it could be different for everyone.
Yeah, that is incredibly important, because there are so many different reasons why students and children and adults with autism might engage in challenging behaviors, and if we don't try to understand the underlying, what we call function of that behavior, then we're probably not going to be so effective at helping them.
What about some of the scientific research that you're aware of for interventions? And you say a lot of that, it could be psychological. How much is educational? What kinds of different sort of therapeutic ways can you look at it?
Well, if you Google autism treatment, you'll find over 400 treatments for autism. Everyone has their own hypothesis about what the cause of autism is. In applied behavior analysis, we behavior analysts come from the perspective that autism is a biological condition. However, educational and behavioral approaches can have a profound impact on the functioning of people with autism by looking specifically at where they're struggling and what types of skill deficits they have, and systematically teaching them skills that they can need to be more successful with their within their environment.
So who benefits the most from this research other than the actual the patient who has perhaps a behavioral disorder? I would suspect a lot of parents, when they find out that their child might be autistic or has another behavioral disorder similar to that, they're often bombarded with all kinds of different strategies to deal with it. They're surely not the right people to know what would work best for their son or daughter at any age.
Well, you know, I have mixed feelings about that, in that parents are the best advocates for their kids, and we certainly want them to be as educated as possible, but I agree wholeheartedly with you that it's absolutely overwhelming for parents to have to sift through hundreds of treatments, everyone promising them the moon, everyone promising them, you know, that this treatment will work, glowing testimonials, in some cases celebrity endorsements. And it's really unfair for families. Imagine if we were talking about childhood leukemia and parents of kids with leukemia were bombarded with hundreds of treatments and they had to sift through all of that. It's very, very unfortunate.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, because I would want to know that I was getting the best treatment for my son or daughter. But you're right. You say even with things that they would sort of say that promising the moon or even celebrity endorsements, it makes me think of, like, why would someone want to stand to gain from pushing one view over another about what works clinically or not?
Well, you know, every provider, I believe that every provider in the field, or most providers, really come from a place of, they believe in what they're doing. They want to believe that their tool chest is effective for kids with autism. Many, however, are really guided by the profits that are generated by, you know, touting a particular intervention. Individuals write books that are based that are not based on any kind of scientific research that's published in peer-reviewed journals, and they're touting their particular intervention. So there is a financial gain. But again, you know, many providers, they do what they've been doing, and they believe in it, and, you know, it might not be the best approach, but I do believe that comes from a place of goodness in many, many cases. However, you know, research is published every year, and, you know, as a provider in the field, I'm constantly looking to the literature to see what can I do better. Because we're still not achieving the best outcomes for every single child with autism, so we have a lot to learn, and we have to turn to science and research and peer-reviewed journals to really guide us.
Some of the popular things that I think people have, and I don't know if they're true, if they work, or if they're maybe sort of misunderstood, is some of the different forms of therapy that I've heard, especially for kids with autism in the past, has been sort of like playing with animals or introducing music or some other sort of sport or exercise. Do those things really work? Are those things where there's a lot of focus, or does it get a lot more technical than that?
Well, you know, I want to make the distinction between you know, say, for instance, horseback riding therapy. There is not a substantial body of research supporting this as a treatment for the core characteristics of autism. However, do many kids with autism derive significant pleasure and joy out of interacting with horses and riding horses? Absolutely. You know, so as a recreational experience, I completely support that, and same with music and art. But when you start attaching the word therapy to these, like horseback riding therapy or music therapy, it's important that the providers be able to prove that their interventions are therapeutic. That's how you earn the right to call it therapy, is to be able to demonstrate that it has therapeutic value. And we look to the research, and for many of these treatments, it's not there.
How do I know if I'm a parent and I'm dealing with my family doctor and my son or daughter has a behavioral disorder? How do I know right away? It would probably often start with perhaps a referral to a professional, but that professional would be familiar with some of the kinds of developmental therapies that would probably help.
That's an excellent question. It's important for parents to ask questions about whether or not the interventions that are being offered to their kids have a basis in science. And it's important for providers to be very, very honest about that. And you know, I would love for there to be a time where a provider who's doing something like maybe therapeutic horseback riding to say, I believe in this methodology. However, no one has proven to be effective. But the second piece of it, which I think is critically important, is that as a behavior analyst, we measure We identify the targets that we believe are going to change as a result of our intervention, and we collect some information to objectively measure it. So regardless of what people do to help kids with autism, it's extremely important that they collect data objectively to help them understand whether they're helping this child or harming this child or having no impact. And the only option is to help. No, so if your data, if your information is not showing demonstrating gain in an objective way, then you have to change course, which might include just looking at another intervention or looking carefully at how you're implementing the intervention that you started in the first place.
Yeah, how much more work needs to be done to find maybe the best ways possible to help treat people? And like you said, there's so many different ways that you can address maybe one issue because people would do them for different reasons as behaviorally. When you look at the case of what's going on at UMB, they're really looking to help find as well the best way to deal with some of these ways of treatment and find out which ones are clear-cut, maybe the best ways to introduce. As maybe like you say, if someone has leukemia, you just know what to do. If someone in New Brunswick says, you know, my son or daughter has autism and you're referred to a specialist, you want to know that what they're usually after assessing your child, that they're going to get exactly basically the best stuff or the best sort of therapy that can be provided for his or her case.
Absolutely. You know, if I just want to get back to a point, you know, using the leukemia example, you know, I hope your listeners can appreciate the inappropriateness of treating, say, childhood leukemia with therapeutic horseback riding. You know, I think it's important that folks think about other disorders and autism and what are some of the differences. Again, I just want to emphasize how much concern we have for the fact that parents of kids with autism have to go through so much and they're bombarded with so much noise about different interventions. But going back to the piece about the data collection and things that we need to learn, it hopefully every child essentially would be their own real research study, and that information is being collected as we work with that particular child to help us really understand how we're helping, how much we're helping, and the speed with which we're addressing some of the concerns that we have and closing the gap that might exist between the child and typically developing peers. In terms of future research, we continue to look for more efficient and effective ways to treat kids with autism, but also to look carefully at some of the training models. Because of the intensity of many treatments for autism, we have to see whether or not we have the tools to help people who are doing the teaching. It's not just about the teaching procedures themselves, but it's also about the training procedures and the follow-up procedures to ensure that the people who are in the trenches working with kids with autism every day are doing it as best they can.
Doctor, thanks so much for this.
Sure.
That's Dr. David Celiberti, the president of the Association for Science in Autism Treatment. Again, he's in Hoboken, New Jersey, where it's horribly early there. And for more info on David's work, you can go to www.asatonline.org. Again, www.asatonline.org. Again, the findings in his report will be used to establish a protocol for the College of Extended Learning's training program at UNB, and UNB will be sharing its findings with those involved in both administration and support of autism programs, not only across the province, but expected to be throughout Atlantic Canada as well. Time for a break. We'll be back.